Hello and welcome to this edition of the Grant Us Knowledge podcast. I'm Grant Goulibon, Deputy State Director with Americans for Prosperity, Pennsylvania. And we're an organization dedicated to expanding liberty for Pennsylvanians by eliminating barriers to opportunity that exist currently and by opposing the imposition of new ones. And this edition of Grant Us Knowledge deals with a very significant current attempt to impose a new barrier to opportunity on Pennsylvanians. And as with so many such proposals nowadays, it's being touted as being absolutely necessary to protect public health and safety, and the proponents are warning us of dire consequences if it's not enacted. In this case, in the name of combating climate change, Pennsylvania Governor Tom Wolf is attempting to have Pennsylvania join something called the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative, or as it's commonly known, REGGI, which is it's a multi-state cap-and-trade program that seeks to reduce carbon dioxide emissions from fossil fuel-fired electric generation plants. Now, the governor's plan took its first step, as we're recording today, when the Pennsylvania Department of Environmental Protection's Environmental Quality Board, or EQB, voted to begin the process of establishing a cap-and-trade program via regulation under authority that the governor claims that he has under state law as it exists. There's to be a 60-day public comment period once the regulation is published as draft in the Pennsylvania Bulletin, with five virtual public hearings. Now, this has been a process that's been going on for most of this year, as the governor has declared his intention very early on to have Pennsylvania join REGGI. And many state legislators and private sector business owners and organizations representing them, however, disagrees very strongly with the governor, first of all, about whether he has the authority to do this in the manner that he's trying to do it, and also, too, as to whether or not this is the right public policy choice for Pennsylvania, both in terms of the environment, in terms of energy production, and in terms of the larger economy. These folks also believe that as a matter of principle and transparency in government, that the Pennsylvania's people, its citizens who elect our representatives, should have a greater say in the process through those elected representatives. And both the State House and the State Senate recently passed bipartisan legislation, House Bill 2025, that would do that. And of course, the governor has already announced that he will veto it when it gets to his desk. Now, the belief that the people's representatives should be more directly involved in this decision is strengthened by the fact that REGGI is expected, or joining REGGI is expected, to cause a tremendous amount of upheaval in Pennsylvania's economy and in communities throughout the Commonwealth, as well as the fact that the evidence from the states that have already joined REGGI and have been part of REGGI is at best inconclusive, let's say, maybe even a little bit less than inconclusive. Some would say there's a lack of evidence that REGGI has achieved its stated goals in the states that are currently members. So joining me to discuss the current situation and the future prospects for Pennsylvania as this process plays out in terms of the governor's attempt to get us into REGGI are Clint Woods, a policy fellow in regulations with Americans for Prosperity, and Rebecca Euler, who's the state legislative director with the National Federation of Independent Business Pennsylvania. Clint, Rebecca, thank you both for being on the podcast today. I appreciate it.
Happy to be here. Thanks, Grant.
Thank you.
Thanks,
thank
Grant.
You.
Looking forward to it.
No problem. Clint, I'll start with you here. I gave a brief overview of what REGGI is about and what it's intended to do, but can you talk in a little bit more detail about REGGI, its structure, its goals, and whether or not in its current form, has it achieved what its supporters have set out for it to achieve?
Absolutely. So as you mentioned, REGGI, or the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative, the cap and trade program, that currently has 10 member states: Connecticut, Delaware, Maine, Maryland, Massachusetts, New Hampshire, New Jersey, New York, Rhode Island, Vermont. And Virginia will be joining the compact, I believe, in 2021. So this is an interstate compact that was originally drawn up in 2005, went into effect in 2009, and it establishes a cap-and-trade program to regulate carbon dioxide emissions from fossil fuel-fired power plants that are larger than 25 megawatts. So the current program covers about 165 facilities in the Northeast. The structure is kind of interesting. It auctions off most of the states that have implemented it as a quarterly auction. So it sells allowances that these power plants have to buy to cover their CO2 emissions over a three-year compliance period. And then with the revenues from those auctions of the ability to emit carbon dioxide, the executive branch of those states then use the money for a wide variety of purposes under the memorandum of understanding. They're expected to spend at least 25% for consumer benefit or strategic energy purposes. And then obviously has been spent on a wide variety of activities across different states. I just note maybe a couple other things that may be worth your listeners knowing. I think one is that federal regulation of greenhouse gases in the Obama administration, there was an effort called the Clean Power Plan. That was an attempt to regulate power plant greenhouse gas emissions under the Clean Air Act and really ended up being stayed in an unprecedented step by the Supreme Court. But really, in many ways, REGI is sort of a slippery slope towards that model of top-down federal regulation. In fact, the EPA in developing that rule suggested that states ought to do things like REGI to comply in the future. And the Clean Power Plan was really attempting to force states into a multi-state cap-and-trade regime in which certain states would win and certain states would lose. And so in many ways, we see REGI and Pennsylvania's participation as greasing the skids for a future administration that wants to adopt more aggressive carbon policy at the federal level. And there was just an analysis this week from the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, they concluded similar to what AFP would say about that effort, which is that the Clean Power Plan would have cost at least the lowest income Americans hundreds of dollars in electricity bills every year and be virtually all pain with very little gain. And so we think that approach really doesn't make a whole lot of sense. Grant, sorry for running a little bit long, but I think you asked a really important question, which was REGI sounds like a very big structure and is a very important decision that's facing the Environmental Quality Board and the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. Has it worked? And the short answer is no. There is virtually no evidence that REGI and its members have succeeded in reducing greenhouse gas emissions from the power sector. I think it's important to note that the United States has really seen pretty dramatic greenhouse gas emission reductions over the last decade and a half, with or without top-down policy like this. So between 2005 and 2019, so up to the pandemic, the power sector in the U.S. saw about a 12% reduction in carbon dioxide. Over that same period, global CO2 increased by over 20%. So the U.S. has been the global leader when it comes to reducing greenhouse gases. But more importantly, Pennsylvania has reduced greenhouse gases from the coal-related power sector more in the last decade than all 10 members of REGI combined. Between 2007 and 2017, functionally the life of REGI, Pennsylvania has done more to reduce coal-fired power plant emissions than all of those 10 members. So obviously not a lot of evidence that indicates that REGI has been a driver of reduced emissions. It has succeeded in generating revenue for politically connected projects, billions of dollars across those 10 states to be distributed to well-connected firms and various projects. But I think the evidence that we've looked at, the evidence that the Congressional Research Service, the nonpartisan group that serves as a think tank to Congress, also found that there's been virtually no direct impact on greenhouse gases, all suggests REGI costs a lot and without much benefit when it comes to greenhouse gases. And avoiding those top-down solutions would probably be a better path for Pennsylvania.
No, your points are very well taken regarding how well Pennsylvania has done without joining REGI in terms of reducing emissions. Again, the tremendous strides that we've made partially due to the development of the natural gas industry, but also, too, the fact that Pennsylvania has, again, taking these steps and work through them. Rebecca, in terms of your organization, NFIB Pennsylvania has been on the front lines as far as the debate over Reggie and whether the governor has the authority to do so, but also too in terms of the impact on your members, which are small business people. Can you talk about what your members have been saying to their elected officials, and what you see as the major flaws in the governor's approach here?
Sure. We do, as you said, represent small, the smallest of the small businesses, the mom and pop shops. Our average member has about 5 employees. So we are the small businesses represented here in Pennsylvania. And absolutely, we've been on the front lines of this, because during this whole COVID crisis that we've had, of course, small businesses have been impacted by that immensely and disproportionately to big businesses. So we see Reggie as just another onerous, requirement that we're going to try to put on our small businesses that are just on the edge anyway. But basically, in talking with our members and small businesses around the state, their concerns generally sort of fall into 2 categories with Reggie. And one is higher energy prices, and the second is jobs. And I'll talk about those both in a little bit more detail here. But we know that Reggie is going to lead to higher energy costs. Even DEP admits that that will be the case in the short run, for sure. So higher energy costs are especially hard on small businesses. And think of those that have really high energy use, like laundromats, car dealers, mini markets because they run refrigerators, manufacturers, and others that use a lot of energy. So tight margins in small businesses make it really difficult to adjust prices on their goods and services, or even to change their business practices when they have an increased cost. They're usually much too small to negotiate reduced rates from energy suppliers, like maybe some bigger businesses can do. So the worst part is that even if they're not a big energy user, small businesses depend on services and materials that are impacted all along the supply chain by higher energy prices. So we see higher energy costs stacking at each step along those supply chains, which increases the cost of, running a business, but also the cost of final products. And when this is going to make everything more expensive for everybody. It makes Pennsylvania less competitive than other states. It makes our businesses less competitive on the, national market. So we look at this really as a hidden tax that really permeates the whole economy. It puts Pennsylvania businesses and the jobs that, they support at risk. So that's sort of the first category of small business concerns. And the second, I'd say, is the job losses that affect the communities right in the area where these coal plants are located. And I mentioned coal plants, even though Reggie is effectively going to tax both coal and natural gas plants, which incidentally is about 57% of our electricity in Pennsylvania. But we know the coal plants have told us that they will go out of business if Reggie goes into effect. So we have 7 coal plants in Pennsylvania. And we know that there are huge employers in those local communities. So there are hundreds, thousands of jobs in those local communities that will be lost at the plants first. But then there will be hundreds and likely thousands of small businesses around each of these plants that are up and downstream of the energy companies. So if the coal plants go out of business, so will the suppliers, the manufacturers that supply the plants, the rail and freight workers that move coal and raw materials, the businesses that repair machinery and vehicles, even professional services that serve these communities. But even worse, should all those plant workers and their ancillary providers go out of business and put their workers out on the street, other small businesses in those communities are going to suffer too. So think doctors and dentist offices, chiropractors, grocery stores, gas stations, tax services. I could go on and on. Contractors. Those are our small business members, and they, they pay a lot of the tax in this state. So the cumulative effect of all those business closures is going to mean a contraction of the tax base in those local communities. School districts won't be well funded. They'll be in dire straits without local tax revenue. Local governments, community services in those areas are going to be greatly impacted. And we wonder who's going to pay for that. So just sort of to sum up, those are the two biggest concerns that small businesses have. But I think one of the bigger issues that is that all of this pain for very little gain, like, you know, like I think Grant mentioned before, we don't really see that this is going to have the intended effect on climate change, for that matter. So if we're going to talk about all these job losses and tax increases, at least show us what the impact will be. And we just don't see it having the impact that they say it will.
Now, I found it very interesting in listening to the discussion at the EQB meeting today that DEP actually did acknowledge that, yes, there will be job losses in the short term, they say, and also that there'll be a decline in personal income as well in Pennsylvania. But again, yeah, they claim that their modeling shows that, you know, well, you know, yeah, it's just temporary, and then you know the green revolution will take off and we'll be rolling in money again. But as you mentioned, I mean, again, the cascading effect, no one gets out unscathed here. No sector of the economy, no small business person, no big business person. And you mentioned the ancillary effects too on local governments, their ability to provide services, school districts, et cetera. And one final point I wanted to make too, and then I'm not sure if you got to hear this part of the hearing as well, but you know there were multiple attempts by members of the board to get the board on record as committing to hold an in-person public hearing in one of the communities most affected by the potential joining of REGI, which is Indiana County in the southwestern Pennsylvania. And there are three large coal-fired power plants in that county, going to be one of the most heavily affected. And vote after vote after vote, the governor's appointees refused to vote in favor of committing to hold a hearing in front of those people who are going to be most directly affected. I found that to be stunning and a little disconcerting, but at the same time, you know, kind of par for the course as far as things have gone here. Clint, you mentioned too, I mean, Rebecca talked about the impact on economic activity and electricity prices. In the REGI states to date, what has been the effect in those areas?
Yeah, it's a great question. So I think there's some things that we can compare. We can look at electricity prices. We can look at economic growth. We can certainly look at the combination of policies, including REGI, that are really part of what I think is an anti-fossil fuel, anti-affordable energy agenda that's been pursued at the state and local level in some of these states and maybe expanding nationally. If you look at electricity prices, 8 of the 10 states in REGI have higher retail electricity rates than Pennsylvania as of this summer. The average is about 18.5 cents per kilowatt hour, which is about 25% higher than Pennsylvania. And just to put that in real terms, if Pennsylvania's electricity were to increase to the average of what the other REGI states have experienced, we'd see an average Pennsylvania family would be paying more than $460 a year more in their electricity bills. So real money, and obviously a regressive impact for those that are the most vulnerable. We've also seen that most of the states in REGI have a much lower economic growth, as well as slower growth in manufacturing and manufacturing jobs, as well as output over the last decade when you compare them to Pennsylvania. And I think those states have also not benefited from the energy revolution of unconventional pursuit of oil and gas that Pennsylvania has. We've seen many of the states in REGI have either their state legislatures or their governors or in some cases their localities pursuing an anti-energy agenda, including prohibitions on hydraulic fracturing, but also bans on the use of natural gas in homes and buildings, which is truly impacting, I think, energy poverty and the burdens among lowest income Americans. And you know, as the Pennsylvania Public Utility Commission pointed out last year in a report, low income Pennsylvanians experience some of the highest energy burdens in the country, especially in rural areas. And at AFP, we think that energy is really the master resource that opens up economic opportunity, whether it's in the form of affordable mobility. Obviously, COVID-19 has demonstrated just how important it is to be able to get out of your house and to have reliable electricity and inexpensive heating and air conditioning that enables and really provides the key for individuals to move up the ladder and pursue social mobility in a way that's breaks barriers and opens up opportunities for everyone. So we really see government intervention in the form of REGI as being inconsistent with that economic opportunity.
No, absolutely. And for a state like Pennsylvania, too, one of the points, again, made during the meeting today, and I think this was Senator Jean Yaw, who's the chair of the Senate Environmental Resources and Energy Committee, was that Pennsylvania is different from almost all of the other REGI or the existing REGI states in that we're an energy producer and exporter, whereas most of these other states are energy consumers. And Rebecca, in terms of talking about Pennsylvania's economy and how it's composed and the unique effects on that REGI would have, certainly that's something that I think has received enough consideration.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that. Pennsylvania is the largest net exporter of energy in the nation. We have, as you know, been blessed with an abundant natural gas resource here in Pennsylvania, which has revolutionized energy, not just for Pennsylvania, but for the world, really, for the United States, which we are now, we can authoritatively say that we're an energy independent nation. We have this amazing natural gas resource here that's made our energy more affordable. It's helped helped expand our economy here in Pennsylvania. We produce actually more than twice of the energy, that we actually consume in Pennsylvania. So half of our energy gets exported. And interestingly, Clint was talking about some of those other REGI states. The reason why their emissions have come down, and it's true that their CO2 emissions have declined, is partly because they're importing Pennsylvania energy. And that's as a result of our amazing natural gas revolution. And as we talked earlier, CO2 emissions are down immensely. They're down 38% since 2005. And in fact, because Clint mentioned it earlier, the Clean Power Plan, that the Obama era Clean Power Plan, we are already 9% lower in CO2 emissions in the target that was in the Clean Power Plan. We're already 9% lower than that. So I think we are a unique state. We will be the only exporting energy state in Pennsylvania. There's no reason why we should, quite frankly, shoot ourselves in the foot with REGI at this point. And as for, we're talking about encouraging part of the reason for REGI is encouraging renewable energy resources. That's one of the stated goals, non-fossil fuel resources. And if you look at the numbers, actually, REGI states increased their wind and solar generation over the past 15 years by 2.3%, but non-REGI states increased it by 5.5%. So even if you're looking to increase green energy resources, REGI is not the way to do it.
No, absolutely not. And it points to a flaw that has been present in Pennsylvania's economic policy for generations. And this is under administrations and general assemblies of both parties. The idea that government can pick winners and losers and do a better job of deciding what types of investments are going to be profitable or socially conscious or whatever the criteria is, that they can do a better job than people freely interacting in a market. And, again, DEP and the supporters of this are trying to tout it as, well, see, there are market forces at play here because it's, where people are buying and selling allowances in the cap and trade market. But this is an artificially created system. It's an artificially created cap. It's not truly a market setup in that it's freely run by people making free decisions, completely government regulated. And also at the same time, the proceeds of those things, again, will be politically controlled in terms of who gets the dollars and the types of investments that are made.
Yeah, and to that latter point that you make there, a lot of the other REGI states have made investments with the money that has been generated through these auctions. And Pennsylvania, because the governor is choosing to go about this process through a regulation rather than trying to get the General Assembly to pass a bill that would allow us to join REGI, he's pushing it through by executive action. Because of that, he will be limited in what he can actually spend the proceeds on. So he's making the case that this action is permitted under the Clean Power Plan, the Air Pollution Control Act, under Pennsylvania's Air Pollution Control Act. But in order to spend funds under that Air Pollution Control Act, you have to justify that the programs make the air cleaner. So you couldn't use the proceeds from REGI to, you know, for instance, for job training for displaced workers from the power plants, or to aid the local communities through local governments, school districts, and even individuals that suffer as a result of REGI. You wouldn't be able to expend any of the money generated on those types of expenditures. They would all be spent on, for instance, green energy or clean power or energy efficiency measures. Those would be the only things the governor would be allowed to spend those programs on, the program funds on.
Well, Clint, as a final comment, in terms of what you're seeing around the country, the type of research that you're doing, you know, any final thoughts or, you know, sort of guideposts for us as we go forward here in Pennsylvania?
Absolutely. Well, I think Pennsylvania is a really critical battleground for this issue. I think the evasion of legislative accountability is incredibly problematic, and I think it's likely to see more of that rather than less.
Well, sobering things to think about here, and I appreciate both of you being on today, and thank you for the perspective, the great discussion, and again, I appreciate all your time and the good work that you're doing. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
No problem. I want to thank all of you out there for listening to Grant Us Knowledge. To learn more about Americans for Prosperity Pennsylvania and the work that we're doing across the state, you can find us on Facebook and on Twitter at AFP Pennsylvania. And this is Grant Gulabon, continuing in the words of the great economist Walter E. Williams, to push back the frontiers of ignorance and to sell my fellow man on the blessings of liberty. Till next time on Grant Us Knowledge, thanks for being with us. Have a good day.